It is Thursday, February 5th, and this is Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester and Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated, Pete Sampson, The Athletic. And guys, if this was about 10 years ago, it would be the most highly anticipated and listened to podcast of the year following National Signing Day. As it turns out, yesterday was purportedly National Signing Day, and Notre Dame brought in two members. Drew Mentock, thanks for reminding me of that happening when you helped me out with the outline today, so I'm going to send it to you. Let's discuss those two members. One of them very, very important for the 2027 season, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, the most important one is getting Teddy Girard and, you know, him reclassifying. He didn't get to sign in December. Other teams were still pursuing him, especially schools like Indiana. So getting him in the class and holding on to him. And he is a guy with a lot of potential, as everybody's written and talked about. So we'll see if he can be the guy who might have the potential to replace a guy like CJ Carr, but they're going to get him on campus over the summer and you got him coming in. So that's a noteworthy thing and relieve some angst that I know some people on our message board still had even earlier this week.
This is Tim. This is like, you know, it's like the Bear Bryant days when you're just bringing in, you brought in as many as you want. They have 38 guys. Yeah. They have 38 guys coming in. That's more than a third of the roster that's new. And it's not, you know, I mean, it's eight. This crazy thing with Porath, the kicker. I mean, why can't we just include his name? I don't understand, but there's
being
seven.
In the portal situation, I guess he was never in the portal. So, yeah.
Well, I don't think he was allowed to go in the portal. Yeah.
Okay, but he's still coming to Notre Dame along with 37 other guys. So I don't understand.
Yeah, I think he basically comes in as a, like, kind of like a walk-on would come in 5 years ago where you're like, you know, he's going to be part of the team, but he's not, like, he's just a regular student for a day. And I'm like, I'm going to go out for football.
I bet he makes it too. He's the guy that's going to make it. He will
make it. And we have pronunciations, which I think is key. I don't know that.
Oh, I saw that at the bottom. Yeah, they weren't that confusing this time around.
No, Grayson McHugh is much easier to say.
He's not McKehoe or anything like that.
No, exactly.
O'Shea Hennessy.
O'Shea Hennessy.
That's a great one.
But yeah, that's what we get on National Signing Day these days, pronunciations and talking about kickers that drop out of school and walk on. So that is the National Signing Day report. You heard it here first at Irish Illustrated Insider. Guys, that is crazy, though. There is news before we get to a real fun thing to say about National Signing Day here. Blue Gold Game scheduled officially for April 25th, making way for a concert on April 18th. It is a great date for those of us that celebrate spring break and also winter travel because everybody's easily home from spring break on April 25th. And I believe practice, this is the most important probably for our listeners, practice is scheduled to start unofficially on March 20th, Friday. And in keeping with custom, they usually do 3 days a week in the morning, but it's a lot easier for the spring to do morning scheduling like that, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I'm sure we'll have a couple Saturdays thrown in, Tim. So mark your calendar for March 20th when we get back to work, and until then, we're all off. Just like, no, I'm just kidding.
And there will be practices after the Blue Gold Game is played.
I don't...
Or it's not. It's too late. It's too late now in April.
Yeah, they don't have to. Selfishly, I like this schedule, not for spring break reasons, but honestly, like, it was already going to be a long off season, so now ending, you know, we're doing football work up until May 1st now at The Athletic and Irish Illustrated, and I think that helps a lot. When it ends early and you're in mid-April, ends on April 12th, you're like, all right, 4 months from now, there's going to be some football. But as Tim said, 38 new faces. This is going to be a really interesting opening week and probably the whole spring practice, Tim.
Two quarterbacks, two running backs, seven receivers, two tight ends, six offensive linemen on offense. Three defensive ends, four defensive tackles, two linebackers, five cornerbacks, depending upon where Aiden Pouncey ends up, two safeties, and three specialists. So, yeah, I mean, when I saw like 38 guys, this is like, you know, Bear Bryant's at Texas A&M, and he's bringing as many as he wants.
Pete, it's 38 guys to watch. Last year was 38 guys sitting out in some form.
Yeah, because with the season ending so much earlier, you're going to have a lot less of that too. I mean, those are four games. Notre Dame didn't get its head, you know, beat in because there were high leverage games. So, you know, you remove those injuries on top of just the wear and tear of snap counts. It should be a much more available spring practice than it was last year. So I think spring practice is kind of overrated, but this is one of the more interesting ones I think any of us will have covered just based on the volume of new players to watch.
Yeah, and to that point, I think even just with the playoff run last year, they had more practices from that than they were going to get in spring too. So you just look at that extra work, like it wasn't necessarily all that important, whereas now guys will need some of that. And with, you know, the new additions, I think at least 30, 31 will be on campus already too. So like you're getting a lot of new guys on campus acclimated right away, which is in addition to the crazy number, it's just so many guys are coming early, especially the freshmen. And obviously a lot of them are guys that are intriguing.
Now the teams that make the national title game this coming season, I mean, that there's going to be 2 weeks between the semifinal games.
Is it two full weeks, isn't it?
I think it is.
And then, just about, yeah. And then
the national championship is the last weekend of January. So it's
that's bad. So
we're all kind of counting on Notre Dame making that big run. It'll be a long season if they do.
Before we circle back to signing day stories, and this will give Priester a chance to think of some over 44 signing days. Your favorite one's probably not from the signing day, though. I want to get Pete and Drew's thoughts on Brian Jean-Marie. You guys were not on Monday's podcast, so Drew, start with you. That is from all accounts, everybody we talked to, a very highly thought of assistant coach.
Yeah, a guy that brings a ton of experience. He's been around the game for a long time, worked for a bunch of different programs. He's recruited some really high-level players, maybe not the most recently, although he did bring in Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng to Michigan, so he's still got some guys that Notre Dame was definitely interested recently. And I think it's interesting just some of the people he's worked with, sticking with Charlie Strong, going to Michigan, so he's worked at some schools that do care about academics more than others and stuff like that too. So I think it's a big hire, and I know he was potentially going to go to Georgia Tech until recently, so getting on him and getting him to replace Al Washington so quickly, I think is a big move, and kind of lets Notre Dame start getting ready for spring and stuff like that a little easier. Whereas if this had drug on or they hadn't gotten a guy for a while, this could have been maybe started to get in to be a little bit more of a big deal, but they got it done quickly.
Yeah, I think they could have waited, I think, and it would have been fine based on Ash, Partridge, Henry being there. You know, Trey Rader gets mentioned on this podcast a lot. You know, he's there too. So I think that, you know, having somebody with a little bit of familiarity with Ash helps. Ash, I feel like my big takeaway from the staff turnover is like, I know last year we talked about, is this Chris Ash's defense or is this Notre Dame defense? And they kind of like tiptoed around that concept. This is Chris Ash's defense, man. It's his staff. He's calling the shots there. I think that Chris Ash is going to have a lot more influence on sort of the culture and direction of Notre Dame football this season than he did last year. And one, if this is next year and we're podcasting on February 5th, we would be 11 days removed from Notre Dame playing in the national championship game.
Yeah. I think the stuff, not everybody agrees, but I think the affiliation with Chris Ash, I think, is good and important. And I've mentioned this a couple times and I piss people off when I say it, but the whole idea of a national search for a coach. I'm sure on some occasions that happens, but it's not realistic because it's a profession where you want a comfort zone with your coaching staff. So, you know, Brian Jean-Marie is not a guy that, you know, has that connection with Ash, but the other two hires did. Going back to Jean-Marie, he was a grad assistant for Lou Holtz. I mean, he was around Lou Holtz, Paul Johnson, who was a classic tough guy football coach. Drew, you mentioned Charlie Strong, 10 years, a lot of loyalty there, Jim Harbaugh, et cetera. So I think it's a really good group. Everybody talks about home run hires. I think that expression is overused a little bit sometimes. But, you know, in Aaron Henry, when you have to replace a Mike Mickens, you better be damn good. And he's damn good. And I think most people would contend that Charlie Partridge is one of the better defensive line coaches in the country. So when you consider you lose three assistant coaches on the defensive side of the ball, I think they did a good job. The main thing is when you keep your coordinator, that's where you are able to really keep your continuity.
I wanted to throw in one thing. This, you guys didn't get to this Monday, but I thought it was worth mentioning. Remember how many times last year Marcus would talk about like mirroring fronts and coverages?
Yeah.
Mirroring. Like we were just like, what are you talking about? Like no one ever talks about this.
Yeah.
They're not going to talk about that anymore. Like Chris Ash has a defensive line coach and a defensive backs coach that know exactly how he wants to call when he wants to call it, the way he wants to coach. Everything will be synced up next year, despite the fact that there's three new coaches, you know, in the defensive meeting room. Maybe it won't be synced up in the first quarter of Wisconsin, but we're not going to hear about disjointed fronts and coverages next year. It's just going to be a defense, and it's going to be Chris Ash's defense.
We'll throw out to the people that want that bring up national searches and that, because I kind of understand this contrarian look. Like Harry Hiestand, Mike Elko, Al Golden, Mike Mickens. You give me those four as four of the best hires of the last 15, 20 years. Only Mickens had anything to do with the coach at all. Like they went out and got Harry Hiestand. They went out and got Mike Elko. They went out and got Al Golden. I mean, Marcus Freeman, I guess the only... Well, I mean, Marcus Freeman, I always think he was at Cincinnati, but that has nothing to do with Brian Kelly for after 10 years removed from Cincinnati. So the five best hires were all outside guys. So I do get it. I also get that you want a comfort zone with guys you're hiring. So, I mean,
I think it's to each.
You got to marry those two things. See? More marriage, Pete Sampson. You got to marry the front and the back on these situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Juwan Sider, Dylan McCullough.
Yeah, you could find good ones out there that are not as well.
I only bring that up because it's the preference of the coordinator. And obviously to Chris Ash, that's very important.
Yeah. Before we get to some NFL combine stuff, do you guys want to share any favorite National Signing Day stories that do not involve the awkwardness of being there when Deontay Greenberry went to Houston? Brian Kelly pretending to take a phone call live from Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. Or accidentally putting Eddie Vanderdoes on a list passed out to the media when he was not part of the class.
I got to tell you, the one that, and you know, because you were sitting next to me, Tim, the one that pumped me up the most was when we found out that Kingston Viliamu-Asa was coming to Notre Dame.
Oh, Foramo.
Foramo was like, I did not expect to hear that day. And that was a really pleasant surprise for me.
I remember talking to T. Shepherd's dad on signing day, and I broke the Deontay Greenberry news because he was like, he's going to Houston. I'm like, what? He said he's going to Houston. I'm like, I'm sorry. It sounded like you just said he's going to Houston. He's like, yeah, he's going to Houston. I'm like, okay, thanks. I got to go.
Thanks for the conversation.
Yeah. The other one, I remember calling Ian Williams on signing day just to make sure he signed with Notre Dame. He's like, nah, I signed with Tennessee. And I was like, what? And it's like, I'm just messing with you. I signed with Notre Dame. Like,
that's pretty good.
Drew, how about you? Recollections, signing day?
I didn't really cover the team when February signing day was a big deal. I wrote down the Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah thing just because I remember watching that and being like, it's almost lucky he turned out to be good because he was just like a random three-star, like talented guy, like that you did this kind of pomp and circumstance for. Yeah. I mean, I remember like going back and watching the video and stuff a couple of times. So it was fortunate it worked out because that is an odd player to potentially do that for.
BK at his most dishonest best.
Yeah, disingenuous. I think we can just call him disingenuous, maybe be
disingenuous.
A little more charitable.
Disingenuous is probably the nice way of doing it, yes. Well, it turns out Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was invited to an NFL combine. That's our next topic right here because that guy was good. Hey, I do want to point out Priester and I were extremely high on JOK. I ranked him second. Priester ranked him third in that class.
Oh, wow.
Won't say the defensive tackle that was ranked first in that class by many people, however, because he did not last very long. But Drew Bentock brought this up as part of our outline. Last year, 8 players invited to the NFL Draft Combine. It was announced on February 13th, so very soon they'll be announcing. Drew, why don't you cycle through the obvious that are going to be announced this year, and then we get into the topic of who probably won't be.
Yeah, so in about 325 to like 330 players or so get invited every year. So I think at least 6 from Notre Dame get invited, but the definite obvious ones are Jeremiah Love, Jadarian Price, Malachi Fields, especially after the Senior Bowl, Eli Raridan, I think, Billy Shrouth, Mill Wagner, I think there's a good chance, and then I think after that is where we need to get into some discussions.
Those are the ones that I wrote down. I want to remind everybody that Drew Metcalf will be at the Combine representing Irish Illustrated as he has for the last couple of years.
The last 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say there's less. There's going to be under 7.5. Last year there was 8.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
6 stone cold locks, but I think that's it.
Yeah, all on offense.
Yeah. The only guy that could
Devontae Smith, I don't think it's invited.
I'm glad you brought that up because Tariq Bracey, Thomas Harper, and Jordan Clark were not invited.
Tariq Bracey. Is that $100 last you got
the last
there?
Three nickels were not invited. Jordan Clark played a national title game and played well, and he wasn't invited.
I mean, Samson's got a $100 laugh because I bet.
Yep.
I bet him $100.
It's like nickels and receivers, and this is where Will Pauling unfortunately gets caught up. Like, There are a dime a dozen. There are a ton of Will Paulings. There are a ton of Devonta Smiths. That doesn't mean they can't make it, and they'll be in an NFL camp.
Yeah,
but I just don't think NFL teams need to see them the way that they would need to see everybody else on this list.
I clarified this on the message board because I said there's 150 Will Paulings. I didn't mean he won't make a team. I think Will Pauling will make a team, actually. But he is not getting – it was somebody said he might be drafted in the fourth round, Pete. Mm. Like, there I go, guys.
Hey, now.
It's not even a thing. That's not even a thing that could happen. But he could end up being as good as a fourth-round receiver. That's how the NFL works. But there's 100 – there were 49, 50 receivers last year invited to the combine. Bo Collins made a team, fared well, and he was the eighth lowest-rated player after the combine at his position. Bo Collins is a lock to go to that combine. You know, it's just hard. It's just a lot of players out there. If you go down and read the wide receivers, there are so many wide receivers you did not know at that combine last year. It is crazy to see that. There's just it'll be harder for Will Pauling to get drafted. It'll be harder for Will Pauling to be invited to the combine than to be drafted than to make a team. I think Will Pauling's good and he'll make a team, but that's not the guy you invite to the combine.
It's like Will Pauling. I don't want to say he gets hurt by playing at Notre Dame, but like, if you're an NFL scouting department, you've sort of seen everything you didn't need to know. The guy who's playing at, I don't know, St. Cloud State, you're like, actually, could we put him on the same field as these other guys? Because I'd like a more of a like-for-like comparison. Like, Will Pauling has already got that.
He's solid.
I think he'd be better there, for him. Yeah. I don't think he will get invited, but I think there's an outside chance Devonta Smith could, just because maybe the injury history, they want to get him there for that. He did get invited to the East-West Shrine Bowl. Maybe there's some people who got to look at him there that maybe are going to push for him to get there, some scouts or things like that. I don't necessarily think he will. I agree that you don't really see Nichols getting an invite. And sometimes it also goes the other way, where I feel like scouts like a guy and they don't want him to get that limelight. They want to keep him under wraps too. So who knows how it's going to work, but
like, there really aren't any, you know, two Alamacas.
Not there's no,
there, there really, there just really aren't many options. I don't see, I mean, maybe you're right, Drew. I mean, maybe Devonta Smith then ends up being, they've got to invite some Nichols. I don't know who the top Nichols in the country were per se.
Maybe being Alabama and Notre Dame doesn't hurt Devonta Smith's case.
That's true.
But I think it's, again, it's the same as Pauling. Yeah. It's like, we've already seen enough of him. You know, just like from a Will Pauling point of view, these are the colleges of the wide receivers who play for the Seattle Seahawks, which will be playing on Sunday night. One is Ohio State. The other ones are Eastern Washington, right, Weber State, Lenoir Rhine, and what am I missing? Duke. So, I mean, those are guys that NFL people probably would have liked to have seen against higher level athletes at the combine. Whereas, you know, Will Pauling, Devonta Smith, you've sort of already seen it.
Wrapping up segment one, there was not a high level college basketball game played last night, but Notre Dame did lose by double digits for the 21st time. Is that right, Tim Priester? In the last 3 years of Micah Shrewsbury's
27.
Tenure? 27.
It's actually my Thursday thoughts today. I mean, they're more likely in ACC competition, they're more likely to lose by double digits than single digits.
They did cover 17.5, by the way. Thank you, Matt Freeman, for sending me that note early in the morning, because I was like, that's too high. That was inflated.
That was, yeah. Well, that was
the best thing I could say about Notre Dame basketball this year, is that line was inflated.
the backdoor cut was open all last night. That was very impressive.
That's right. We were talking ICCL basketball earlier today. That's true.
Yeah, and I want to say this, because like, everybody rips on how much Braden Shrewsbury plays, and I think there's no doubt that there are times where he plays too much, but the guy's got to play. I mean, now he's taking the ball to the bucket, and they need that. There are a lot of deficiencies in his game. You know, when you're a shooter like that, you can't afford to play 30 minutes and score 7 points. And there are times where, like, he'll go long times, you know, and a half without scoring. But this team, they've got to have him on the floor. They just do. And that means ineffective play. Sometimes Cole Serta, I think, is getting better, a little bit more consistent. He's a threat. I like the future of Brady Kaler. I really think that his length and and his game overall will help them. But they have 8 games left. I wrote about this in Thursday Thoughts. They can win 4 of them. They can win. They might be able to win 5 of them. Actually, Duke, they're not going to win. NC State, they're not going to win. NC State's pretty good this year, but at Pittsburgh, they're terrible. I should have this in front of me, but they really have a
chance.
Georgia
Tech here, Florida State this weekend.
Florida State here. Yeah, I mean, they can win.
Stanford, Boston College, too. So they
exactly
play 4 of the bottom 7 ACC teams right now. All have 3 or 2 wins in conference. So they do have some of their easier games coming up.
I'll go under 5 on my always going over.
Okay, well, yeah, I would set it at 4. I would set it 4.5, really, maybe 4. Under 4?
Under 4.
I mean, they're not much better than those other teams who are terrible. So I would think just they would split those games.
I hear you, but I think that I just think the makeup of this team led by Carson Tout, they're just going to keep fighting. I just think that that's one. Maybe they're naive enough to just keep fighting here and playing. I think they will. I don't know what 4-4 gets you. It doesn't. 4-4 gets you 6-12 in the conference.
Which, that doesn't get much. That's the Garrett.
You make the ACC tournament.
You make the ACC tournament.
Yeah. I think that it should be 3.5 would probably be where I'd put the over under.
If they get to
5, I think you feel good about what they're building and I guess how they finish the season at least would be where I'd go.
Who wants to take a bet with me at 3.5? I'll take over.
So you say they'll go 4-4?
At least.
I'll take
the under. If you're saying at least, I want you to bump it to 4.5 because I'm taking the under.
Then it's easy money.
I would have to just set it at 4.
I'm putting Houston Griffith in the draft and asking me where he's going to get drafted. There is.
I've just set it at 4, and if it's a push, it's a push.
I'll take that. All right. Well, we actually did have a basketball question we might blow off now in segment 2, but we'll be back regardless with segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. Welcome back to segment 2. We call it Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Irish Gambler, and it was saved from Monday for Pete Sampson. I would love for Pete to expand on his bold prediction in an athletic story where he wrote about future football scheduling and the ACC.
It's probably disappointing for people that it was just a bold prediction. I think that there's more, despite Jim Phillips' commentary, I think in the last week, some on The Athletic about, they've mended fences with Notre Dame. The ACC appreciates Notre Dame's value to the league, and Notre Dame appreciates the ACC's value to Notre Dame. I definitely think there are some people at Notre Dame who are like, I disagree. And I don't know if those voices will win out. I think that a less bold prediction, which would not qualify as making that story, is like Notre Dame just sort of waits to see what the college landscape looks in 2030. And then who knows if the ACC is a thing or not. But I think that the animosity or like ill will between Notre Dame and the league by some people around Notre Dame, I think was quite real in December. Maybe that's kind of cooled down since.
Pete, if you could explain exactly what your bold prediction was. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was just that by the end of the year, Notre Dame will serve notice to the ACC, like this isn't working, and they will figure out something with the Big Ten and the SEC to fill the schedules. I also think the problem with the Big Ten is I'm not sure if the relationship between Pete Bavakwa and Tony Petitti is that great. So that would make that complicated to jump into. So you almost would need a bold prediction on top of a bold prediction that Tony Petitti left the Big Ten, and then maybe that would open the door for something. The
scheduling Big Ten teams is a lot more fun and appealing for Notre Dame fans now because those include USC, UCLA, Oregon, and the like, as opposed to just the regional matchups.
I just thought your suggestion, Pete, of the Big East and the rest of the sports being in
that just makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it really does. That's why I thought it was a great comment. Look, I understand, and I know everybody, Notre Dame fans are upset with the ACC, and I get you. What I don't like is an attack on Jim Phillips, because Jim Phillips is a Notre Dame guy and a really upstanding guy. And maybe that was kind of part of what I just didn't like about the way everything unfolded after Notre Dame was denied a big bid. Jim Phillips is a good man and a good leader, and I didn't think that he necessarily deserved that attack.
I would just say I think Jim Phillips has been dealt a bad hand, and he has not played it great all the time, but there's, if you've got a 6 and a 4 off suit, there's only so many things you can do with that.
I mean, the league hasn't folded like Florida State and Clemson haven't dipped out or anything like that. So it could be worse. So he's clearly at least kept it together and restructured things so that those teams at least seem happy enough for now. So I think that's an accomplishment.
I'm going to go back to Drew for this next question from Pink Robots, because I believe these are all modern era meltdowns. And Pete, you guys can jump in after. Which of these fandom earthquakes provoked the most message board activity? Brian Kelly's exit, the Dante Moore decommitment, summer QB battle reveal of 2024, the 2024 championship game. I will let you all know that is not number one because it never is real football. The 2025 playoff snub. The bad portal weekend. That's a great one, by the way. It sounds funny when you read the rest of it, the bad portal weekend compared to all the other things. Drew, what gets your vote for the biggest fandom message board earthquake?
So I didn't cover the team when Brian Kelly left, so I am not aware of the message board meltdowns during that. I wrote down the playoff snub, and I guess maybe with Irish Illustrated just leading up to that specifically, too. I kind of looped that whole thing in together in that. That was a lot. So that's where I'm going to go. I mean, maybe that's a little bit recency bias, but I felt there was a lot of angst and was very well aware of it.
Yes. I went back and looked at the listens or YouTube page views of The Independent, my other podcast with Matt Fortuna. Number one was the college football playoff snub. Number two was BK exit. And number three was Northern Illinois.
That is also the overtime highest live views by far is the playoff snub as well.
I have a hard time differentiating between the snub and Brian Kelly's exit because it both pissed off Notre Dame fans so much that I was actually, Drew, I was standing outside in the vicinity of the Goog when Brian Kelly drove away that morning. So that was an interesting thing to witness. And, you know, I mean, Brian Kelly's exit brought out all the displeasure the Notre Dame fans had with Brian Kelly. It all came to a head at that point. And the snub, I mean, you know, the snub's even worse because Notre Dame absolutely positively belonged in the playoffs. And, you know, college football was denied a great football team playing in postseason.
I would say I got to go with the playoff snub because Marcus Freeman was hired on a week later, 5 days later from Brian Kelly. I think people got pretty excited pretty quickly.
It seemed a long time, but it was
December. It was like December 4th.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think of. The playoff snub.
By the end of the next week, yeah.
The playoff snub has not gone away. The playoff snub has 12 more months to percolate until, unless Notre Dame's 12-0 and number two in the country, people will be pissed about the situation.
We knew it was going to happen. Like,
well, then once the name flashed, you're like, oh, it is officially not going to work out so well here. That once the Alabama name flashed, that was crazy. I mean, I didn't know after Alabama got worked by Georgia, it was going to happen still. I did not know that at all. I did not go into that day thinking Notre Dame wasn't getting in the playoff.
Okay, well, that's fair. I wrote what I wrote.
Yeah, but then you
3 days before, but then they got there. Then they got there. Yeah,
I mean, Notre Dame was minus 1,800 when that game ended.
I did a Q&A with Eli Raridan like a week ago, and I was asking him just like, hey, what was that morning like? He's like, we were a little bit nervous, but then we looked on like DraftKings or FanDuel and we were minus 2,500 to make it. And we're like, all right, I think we're good. Like, we're all a little bit nervous. And then I was like, so was the oh shit moment when Alabama popped up? But he's like, oh yeah, that was like... You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I was sitting in this same spot because I had a full house and we're getting ready to go out to basketball. I was like, oh my God.
And remember that Pete Bavakwa said, you know, we were led to believe that we were in. And when he made that comment, I'm like, that's not what I thought because I can't think of the gentleman's name from Arkansas, the headed up the committee.
Hunter Yurcek.
Thank you. He had indicated weeks in advance that if Notre Dame and Miami were ever close in the voting, in the polls, that Miami would get the nod. So,
Bavakwa meant over Alabama.
Well, okay, you're right.
Alabama got 3 rushing yards and lost by 20.
No, and that was my argument was Alabama, not Miami.
Yeah.
I think I got minus three rushing yards, actually.
Minus three rushing yards.
Let's not oversell it, O'Malley.
That's true.
They lost a five-win Florida State team, too. Like, they had some bad losses, but I agree. As soon as Duke won the ACC, I texted Bryce. I was like, this is bad for Notre Dame. That's when I felt that.
Alabama could have finished 8-6, and they're still going to finish ahead of Notre Dame. I mean, it was so ridiculous. First of all, the flip flop of Notre Dame and Alabama for no apparent reason, and then
they went
Auburn.
For
it. I mean, kidding me?
They went for it on fourth down.
God, unbelievable.
Yes.
We'll go down in college football history as just an absolute screw job.
Our next question is from VA Doc 88. If the Irish need another QB to play meaningful snaps in 2026, who would be the best QB based on what you know now?
I'll put that in there because I don't have an answer. So you,
I don't. There is no answer. There's no answer other than Hebert's been in the program. That's it.
Yeah, but
they were trying to bring in two guys, and they weren't trying to bring in Hebert as of conversations in December.
I understand, but neither of these two.
Probably not Hebert based on that. But
I'd say not Hebert.
But I don't know. I don't think there is a good answer for this. And I know there's some conversation about, like, should they have brought somebody in, and like, what are your plans if CJ Carr gets hurt? Like, you're screwed. Like, it's the Peyton Manning, we don't practice screwed comment. Like, if CJ Carr gets hurt, they're pretty much dead in the water.
Play the young quarterback that you like better than the other one. And then you try to formulate an offense around that. You better hope your offensive line's playing really well at that point.
Turn around and give the ball to Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, which is why they're not as talented as they used to be, but on my point entirely. But go ahead, guys. Just look at all the rest of the talent.
I think if I'm just going to give like a maybe point for Noah Grubbs, is like, he dealt with a decent amount of adversity last year, had to surround sporting cast that really didn't do much, and then he found a way to still win a state championship. I don't know. Maybe there's some sort of moxie or thing that he learned from that could make him better equipped to kind of come into that type of situation. That's obviously, that's not going to be the ultimate factor, but that's my only point for him, that he could potentially be the guy they go on to.
I will say Grubbs simply because he'll be here in the spring, and junior in high school Teddy Girard would not be. That makes it hard to take over for Notre Dame's football team when you're a true senior in high school next September. It's just a little harder. Now, if it's November, like, people always assume, what if CJ Carr gets hurt? Like, it's the Wisconsin game. What if it's in week 10? Then maybe Teddy Girard will have moved up, because really interesting thing will be August. Like, who's your scout team QB? Whoever your scout team QB is out of these young guys is not playing during the year because he's not learning any more offense. Like, you're done if you're the scout team QB, as opposed to Buckner could have learned something quickly. And by the way, I have to bring this up. I don't believe it's happening. And I will credit the colleague that sent me the text yesterday. If it does, I got a text yesterday that said, have you heard anything about Buckner? I have not heard anything about Buckner, but that text is making me look into the quote, have you heard anything about Buckner? Because it wasn't like standard conversation about life.
I know my understanding talking to people close to him was he's got eligibility.
Somehow he has a year.
Yeah, I didn't really understand it, but he has.
Yeah.
He has a year of eligibility.
Just appeal.
So there you go. Put that on the boards, Jack Freeman.
Well,
AI can talk about Tyler Buckner now.
That's not without significance. That's
why I brought it up here. That's why I brought it up.
That'd be who I'd put in the game.
That's who I would put in the game, too. That's why I brought it up. So there we go.
All right, we have a question from Jay Burke 87. I've heard this podcast mentioned before, something to the effect of, it would be okay for Notre Dame to keep getting one-year rentals for the nickel position. What is it about the nickel that lends itself so strongly to grad transfers?
Four years in a college weight room and 4 years of actually playing college football.
Yeah, it's also the hardest position to play in the secondary per everybody that plays nickel.
I also think, too, just like, even though the NFL is valuing maybe that position more, it's not necessarily a premium position like you're going to see with some of the other positions in the secondary. Like, Kyler Gordon is the highest paid slot defender in the NFL. I mean, 3 years, $40 million is what he got last year, which is like good, but it's not like what we see from a lot of safeties or cornerbacks and stuff like that. So it's a position where you might be able to stay in college more. And Kyler Gordon also played cornerback at Washington, so you can, and that was a second round pick. So it's a place where you can, if you're a nickel, you might want to stay in college because you're not necessarily get drafted, because they can convert college corners to nickels if they need to and things like that. So I think it just lends itself also to, like, we're talking about Devontae Smith. There's not likely to get invited to the combine. Like, there's reasons why they're not going to necessarily get drafted and stay around and be available to transfer to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think the answer to the question is experience. I mean, that Notre Dame has gone out and gotten very experienced. Devontae Smith had been a little banged up and stuff, but experienced guys at that position. So, I mean, you want to, that's a plug and play transfer if you got a guy that's played the position before.
I don't have my list handy, but I wrote a story on this. Notre Dame, when they tried freshman nickels for 7 straight years, it was Elijah Shumate, success, benched. Cole Luke, success, benched. Matthias Farley, success, benched. Sean Crawford would have not been benched. He'd have been the one guy, I think, that would have been the nickel that continued to start. Nick Coleman, success, benched. Houston Griffith, success, benched for Nick Coleman. And then Kyle Hamilton stopped it because he's a unicorn. And if you get Kyle Hamilton as a freshman, he will start at nickel. He could start at nickel for Notre Dame if he was 17 as a freshman coming in, because he's the perfect nickel there. But and since then, they've gone to veterans. Like, Sean Crawford was a... They really didn't have one in 2020, but Sean Crawford was a 6-year
player. Speaking of unicorns, when you're playing USC and Mekhi Lemon's in a USC uniform, you move Leonard Moore there and
sure do.
Then good things happen for you.
Yes, that's what we make them happen. Our next question, two-parter from ND Quebec. It's early. He's right about that. But how would you grade Notre Dame's offensive line for the next year, maybe comparing it to this point in 24, 25? And do you grade the defensive line or offensive line higher for 2026?
I like the D-line more than I like the O-line next year.
I do too.
Which is not something I would have said a year ago, because I thought this O-line was shaping up to be like elite, elite, elite. And just for reasons of player departures and injuries, just has not happened. So I don't know how good this offensive line is going to be, but I'm to the point, I think you guys maybe talked about this on a previous podcast I wasn't on, but just like, I'm kind of at the point with the offensive line, like, I'm just going to wait and see it. Like, I'm done being like, this O-line is going to be great. Joe Moore, this, that. Like, let's just go out and see it first. And then I'll have some commentary on how good or great this group could be.
The 24 line at this point was projected to be, after the Sun Bowl, is what we're looking at, okay? Jogusa, Shrouth, Craig, Spindler, or Coogan, because he has been playing. And we all figured Emil Wagner, and that ended up being correct.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good projected line going into 24. And last year was better because they were all those returning guys. I mean, last year was Knapp, Troth, Craig, Jogusa, Jasloss, Coogan, Wagner, Lambert. I mean, I think those were both better projected lines than what you could reasonably project this year. But I don't know, Tim, how do you feel?
Well, I mean, I think a lot hinges on the health of Jogusa, and we're not sure at this stage. If you have him at full strength, he's a plug and play in place of Shrouth, and you know, you're feeling pretty good about you can do what you want to do with, if you got to have Absher in the lineup, you put him at guard, you move Lambert to a tackle spot, you keep Knapp at a tackle spot, Craig's probably not ready, Otting at center. But Pete, I mean I agree with you. I think it's defensive line. If we knew Jogus is 100% rolling, he's not going to climb into any utility vehicle between now and then, and everything's going to be okay, I'd feel
Craig
a lot better.
Craig tore his ACL a year ago, not
right
7 months ago.
7 months ago.
Yeah, but with what they did in the portal with, you know, getting Keeley and then a couple defensive tackles, and, you know, we anticipate Traore playing really his best football. I anticipate Bryce Young. I mean, I have a lot of confidence in the lineage of the Bryce Young family, and that he's going to dial in here and be a much better football player. I agree right now. I think I would definitely choose the D line over the O line, largely because of the uncertainty with Jogusa.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both of you. The only thing I would say is I think maybe the ceiling is higher for the offensive line. Like, if everybody actually clicked like we thought they could, and we had Gerby Lambert maybe bump out to tackle, and that worked out. And I don't know, I could see maybe that, you know, you have three or four five-star potential or borderline five-star former recruits there with a lot of good size and stuff. Maybe if everything does work out, that could be better than if everything worked out on the defensive line. But the defensive line has a lot of talent too.
Yeah, Will Black and Matty Augustine will be good. They will be good offensive linemen. How soon? Not certain.
Yeah, I think if someone had said Charles Jogges is about to start practicing in the spring, it'd be a different answer for me in this one. But like Pete, I'm just going to wait because I'm just going to assume that's not going to work out as well as everybody's going to pretend it's going to work out over the next 6 months.
Our next question is from PA Irish 5. Since ND's omission from the CFP, what offseason development do you thus far consider to be the biggest surprise?
I like this question because I thought of a quick answer, which is the benefit of taking the questions, was the undergrad transfers. The preponderance of undergrad football transfers surprised me in a positive way. There's positive and negative surprises, as we always point out. Mostly undergraduate transfers was surprising. I would have said, you said they got 8 transfers, Tim. How many were your undergrad? I don't know, 2? But that's not what it was.
Yeah.
That's my answer, too. The undergrad transfers was a really significant development.
Just to be different, not fully related to Notre Dame, but I really thought the CFP was going to get expanded, like looking back in like December, and the fact that it's at 12 teams and Notre Dame gets to keep that guarantee, because if it had gone to 16, they wouldn't have that anymore. And after they leaked it, they definitely weren't probably going to get that type of guarantee again going forward. I'm surprised it stayed at 12. And now if they're in the top 12, they're going to be in next year.
It's a good point, Drew. I was too. I mean, I figured it was fairly certain they'd go to 16, because when in doubt, you expand, generally speaking. I can't think of anything more surprising than the undergrad transfers. I could bring up January 2nd, the opening of the portal, but and that was certainly a surprise. But I think we all knew at some point that things were going to loosen up with undergrad transfers. I don't know that it was on our radar right at this moment. We have a question from Nicodemus, and that is, can you look through all the shiny objects on this roster and each predict a player from 24? Did I skip a question? Okay, I'm sorry.
Nope.
All right, Nicodemus, can you look through all the shiny objects on the roster and each predict a player from the 2024 and 2025 classes that could emerge in 2026? Players are getting little outside conversation, but have the talent to make an impact.
There's not a lot of options that I think fit the sort of spirit of this question.
Yeah, because there's good players, but I'm not sure they're not getting much.
You can't choose an E.S. Williams, Tim.
Yeah. I mean, can I choose Madden Frevo? Because I think he gets a lot of conversation about him as well. I mean, I think the guy from the 25 class that will have the biggest impact is Frevo, but he does not fit the parameter. So, geez. Lambert doesn't fit the parameters of this question either. All right, Micah Gilbert. He's my guy.
I wrote down 4 guys. Micah Gilbert was one of them. Kedron Young was one of them. I like Logan Thomas. I don't know where he fits in necessarily. I just think he could be a good player. And then Ethan Long would be from the freshman class of, I think somebody nobody talks about at all, is totally lost to where the secondary is, but I think has a chance to be a good college player.
I wrote down Kedron Young as well. If he can come back, and I mean, there's definitely openings at running back. And I really like James Flanagan coming in. I know he started playing a little bit last year. He's also a guy in high school who like was used more for defense and blocking and stuff. So I feel like maybe now that he's been on school, he'll have his first spring and stuff like that. Maybe he's a guy who could really start elevating his game as a receiver. And I think there's a lot of potential there. So I know there's some other good tight ends and he'll have some competition, but I still feel like there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about what he could do potentially this year.
Sure. I think it was a previous podcast you brought up Micah Gilbert's name. Maybe it wasn't you, because we have so many people rotating through, but Tim, that's my choice, Micah Gilbert. And I mentioned Bryce Young. I think he's really going to come alive. Luke Telich came in 23, so he doesn't qualify, is that right?
He's a senior.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I can see Luke Telich. I realize that he doesn't necessarily project as a starter, but I can see Luke Telich continuing to play. He already plays a big role, but I mean, I just see him being a difference maker on a regular basis, and I think he will continue to do that. Cooper Flanagan, who I know they really like, not necessarily as a guy that's going to get downfield and catch 35 passes, but just what he can do for them, you know, in 12 personnel. But Micah Gilbert's my first choice.
Tim, you didn't read the whole question. You forgot the last sentence there.
Oh, did you sorry for all the punctuation.
Did you get that joke?
I got that. I get that joke. Yeah.
That was him. That was him. Not me. Yeah, that's a great question.
I better start proofreading the AI transcription.
Sorry here. For all the punctuation. It was one of my favorite things I've seen in a question form. Absolutely fantastic.
So I can't believe
Priester didn't mention Cole Mullins for this question.
We banned the name for just a little bit.
He's like Uranius Williams. He's just mentioned too much.
Until I see him playing. Well, you can imagine I was just giddy at Arkansas. Yeah. When he was getting all that playing time. And I thought, see, I've always been like, he was like, Jesus, he's better than I even thought. But he didn't get a lot of run after that.
And that, just in fact, now everybody can drink. So that's fine. Cole Mullins was mentioned on this and it was brought up perfectly. All right. Our final question is related to Notre Dame, the Super Bowl, and national holiday, Super Bowl Sunday. Irish for May 2. Other than Joe Montana, what is your favorite memory from a Notre Dame player in a Super Bowl? And after that, we'll offer some predictions.
I'm going to go way back because Ross Browner had 10 solo tackles in Super Bowl 16.
Against Joe Montana. Doesn't count. Just kidding.
Yeah. I know I'm the only guy here that can say I remember all 60 Super Bowls, which is
nice. Yes. That's a lot. Jerome Bettis winning the Super Bowl in Detroit.
That was great. Yeah.
I think that would have to be after Joe Montana, a solid number two.
He didn't do much, and he didn't do much in that game.
No, that was at the very end of his career, but kind of a cool moment.
Justin Tuck sacked Tom Brady twice, and maybe the greatest upset ever in Super Bowl history. And I mean, that was won by the defense, so that one stuck out to me.
Tuck was mine for sure, and then selfishly, Ricky Waters scoring 3 touchdowns in the Super Bowl also was a good time for 49er fans. But then there was the other Joe Montana ones, if you're going to talk about more Joe.
Yeah.
Joe Theismann won a Super Bowl.
Joe Theismann won a Super Bowl. He didn't do real big. He actually threw 2 picks in that game. And David Givens is the only Notre Dame player to score touchdowns in multiple Super Bowls.
That was, especially considering what he did at Notre Dame compared to what he did for the Patriots. Every time he'd do something, you just think to yourself, huh, could have worked out really well for Bob Davey had he played like that at all. Any Super Bowl predictions? I can tell you quickly, after watching the Seahawks up close and personal twice in a month, I will not be picking against the Seahawks.
I think we could add Julian Love's interception of Drake May to our favorite Notre Dame Super Bowl memories this weekend. I have a prop bet on
Julian Love.
Ooh, I like the Seahawks a lot. I don't even know what the spread is, but I would take
four and a half.
I really like the Seahawks.
I'm as a slightly bitter Broncos fan and watching how that Patriots could barely beat them without their quarterback and the Seahawks also have a pretty good defense, I wouldn't pick against the Seahawks either.
Yeah, I'm on it. They look really, really good to me. I'm on that. You could probably raise that number a little bit and I'd stay on the Seahawks.
I guess that's the only reason I'm not as heavily on it as I would be, because you sure seem like you should raise that number a little bit, but they know a lot. So, no, I think the Seahawks defense is the best unit on the field. For me, and turns out Sam Darnold's a heck of a nice guy too. Have you guys seen all his interviews? And he won't say a bad thing about the Jets, who totally screwed him over and all that. But he's
really,
he was the 49er quarterback when Brock Purdy was injured. No great team out here, right? There's not a great. This is not a Seahawks are not a great team.
Probably not. But I could see them playing a great game and being the convincing winner of the Super Bowl. So.
All right, prop bet. Julian Love scores a touchdown, guys. Go on, jump on it, everybody on DraftKings. Until then, we'll be back on Monday after the Super Bowl. We'll talk a little bit about Super Bowl, especially if Julian Love has a good game. Who else is in the Super Bowl, by the way?
Riley Mills.
Riley Mills is on that's right.
On the roster.
Who I saw on the broadcast a couple weeks ago. Did you see him? He played some games.
Yeah. Yeah, you know why? He's not a rotational lineman like they had last year.
Big guy like that coming back from an ACL, he played in some games. I'm sure it was totally mop-up stuff. But
Super Bowl Sunday, if you guys read Monday Musings, you know it should be Super Bowl Saturday because you can get 13 days off and make it a national holiday so we all don't have to go to work and school the next morning. But we will be back on Monday after the Super Bowl for another Irish Illustrated podcast. Until then, for Pete Sampson of The Athletic, thank you for joining us. Tim Priester and Drew Mantuck of Irish Illustrated. I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.